For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show here at News Talk STL. This is Paul Kurtman and Susie Moore in for Tim and Chris. They will be back tomorrow?
Yes.
They're going to be back tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sounds good. Can't wait to start listening to them on the radio again. They're a pretty good team. But Susie, I want to talk to you. You are the deputy managing editor for Red State, which is a great website to visit for good, relevant, and timely information. And I just realized today, before we came on the show, I went to Red State and I was like, well, Susie's going to be here, so I just want to see what's on Red State. And I hit refresh a couple times and like four or five brand new articles. I thought I accidentally went to a different page.
No.
But I didn't.
We churn them out.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm busy all day long when I'm on the editing desk.
I can imagine just from how, and then since we've been in here during the break, I went to Red State. And bam, there's like a few more.
A lot of content. We usually put up, I would say we put up between 30 and 40 stories a day.
Whenever I see Susie in the studio, she's multitasking.
Yeah, usually.
She's doing stuff on the website. It's amazing.
Typing, approving things, fixing things.
All of the above.
So what do we got on Red State right now?
All kinds of stuff. There's a lot of, I mean, one of the biggest topics, and there's been a bunch of different stories about it because there's so many facets to it, is the whole Twitter thing. Just because there's so many different avenues by which the professional left are attempting to attack Musk and his ownership of Twitter and what he's trying to do with it. And it's like, you know, what is it that they're so afraid of? It makes you wonder. But politicians are coming after him. Companies are coming after him. So there's been a lot of coverage of that. And I know that you and I were talking about the story about Janet Yellen blaming the American consumer for inflation.
That is incredible. So Janet Yellen, she goes on Stephen Colbert's show, which, by the way, I just want to say, I am sick and tired of politicians and all these so-called leaders. They all have to be celebrities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just tired of it. Even when Republicans do it, I'm just sick of it. Like, earn your keep by doing your job.
Right.
You know? But no,
anyway. You're not there to be a celebrity.
Yeah, you're not there to be a celebrity. I was so and I'll tell you, I was turned off when Barack Obama was bringing Jay-Z and all these celebrities into the White House. I understand icons of popular culture will interact with governing leaders. I get that. Barack Obama took it to a whole new level with what he was doing. And then, and that's why at first I wasn't on board with Donald Trump, because all I knew was, hey, this guy's a celebrity TV star, you know, a tycoon from, and now he's running for president, and I wasn't on board with him, but then he turned out to be completely different than what I had expected. But anyway, let me get back on point here. Janet Yellen, this is what she says. She says that inflation was caused by Americans, quote, splurging on goods and technology during the pandemic. So, during this pandemic, over a million people died. People lost their livelihoods. Children's suicide rates skyrocketed. And she's saying that inflation's our fault because we were all just splurging.
Yeah, and peel the layers back there. Why were people splurging? Well, in large part because, A, the government was handing them money to try and make up for, in theory, the fact that they were not being allowed to work or to collect their rents, those sorts of things. And on top of that, people were stuck at home. They couldn't go out to restaurants. They couldn't go do the things that they normally do. So what are they going to do? They're going to spend their money on technology, the things that allow them to operate their lives from home. So let's blame it on where the blame actually lies, and that is on A, the pandemic, and B, our government's response to it.
Yeah, and you just brought up a good point. The government was passing out money.
Yeah.
But the whole point was to spend it.
Yeah.
It was called stimulus money.
But they didn't think that that might cause inflationary pressures?
And of course it is, especially when you shut down borders and you begin to bottleneck what can come in and everything else. So everything begins to slow down. And then I mentioned this during the break, add insult to injury, right? Joe Biden runs for office. We're going to get everything back on track. I'm going to set all kinds
of
records.
Shut down the virus.
We're going to shut down the virus. And no, he has it worse than Trump during the pandemic in terms of moving products from ships in the ocean to the shelves, because his transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, decides that he's going to go on paternity leave because he and his husband adopted a child.
Two
children, right? I don't necessarily think that either one of them needed time to recover, you know, from any type of physical. No. But they both took paternity leave in the middle of a crisis.
Right.
In the middle of a crisis.
So, I'm going to take maybe sort of a non-popular stance on this. I don't begrudge anybody, father, mother, whomever, taking time to be with their infant immediately after the infant's birth, because that time is needed. So I don't have an issue with paternity leave or maternity leave. However, if your job is such that it is critical that you are at it, that someone is manning the ship, so to speak,
yes,
and overseeing things, then when you are going to take that time away, you need to make sure that there is somebody handling that responsibility who knows what they're doing. I don't know that we would have seen anything different had Pete Buttigieg been there doing the job, because I'm not sure he knew what he was doing anyway.
Yeah, I don't think he knew what he was doing. And I think you're right about that. Look, I don't begrudge anybody doing this. However, when you hold such an important position where you are, like, hundreds of millions of people are relying on you to be there to respond. I mean, it would be like calling 911 because my house is on fire and say, well, this will take a little bit longer because half the firehouse is on paternity leave.
Right.
You know?
You have to make allowances for that. Make, you know, plan for somebody to handle your responsibilities while you can.
And even then, if you are the leader, everything rises on leadership. Mm-hmm. And Harry Truman was famous for having that sign on his desk that said, what? The buck stops here. If you're the transportation secretary and we're having a problem getting ships from the shipping lanes into the port to offload goods, not only are we having this whole problem with logistics, right? But this is all happening leading up to and during a baby formula crisis where we were having to have baby formula airlifted of all places from Germany, mm-hmm. airlifting baby formula into the Midwest. And Pete Buttigieg is nowhere to be found unless he wants to try to convince everybody that he's actually riding his bicycle to work every day to save the, to save the climate.
That last few yards.
Yeah, that last few yards. And that's, anyway, that actually plays right into this whole Janet Yellen thing, right? Because here she is. She wants to be funny. She wants to show everybody how smart she is on Stephen Colbert's show. But she just wants to be a celebrity, and Pete Buttigieg wants the same thing. That's why he'll pull his bicycle out of the back of an SUV and bike the last 100 yards and have people convinced that he's doing this every day. Like the Secretary of Energy or the Joint Chiefs of Staff or any of these people are actually riding their bicycles around Washington, D.C.
You don't think Jennifer Granholm is a biker?
I don't think any of them are bikers.
If you all could see the look that Paul gave me when I said that.
I think they have all been working as hard as they can to get into a position where they get their own drivers and people calling them or stopping by their desk to ask them what they want for lunch, their own personal waiters and maitre-d's. That's what I think that they want. And I bet they're all on a guest list for Stephen Colbert, waiting for their chance to sit in the chair and be funny and show people how clever they are.
Don't you understand, Paul? The rules they want to apply to you do not apply to them.
They don't. That is for sure.
It's electoral privilege.
Electoral privilege?
Yeah.
Is that a...
Didn't you, like, exploit that when you were representing the citizens of Franklin County?
Explain electoral privilege.
No, you've been elected to this position of leadership. Therefore, you must be very important and very worthy of being... You know, basically spoiled and having your way and not having to follow the rules that everybody else does.
So I got invited. I once introduced a bill called American Laws for American Courts. And this was a bill. It didn't specifically highlight just Muslims, but it said, hey, listen, any type of law out there that does not align with our Constitution, mm-hmm. we need to make sure that we're using our Constitution takes precedent, because the idea is to keep people free. We don't want honor killings or anything else, right? Right. But it wasn't just Muslims. We talked about ecclesiastical law, so any type of religious law, sure. Everything has to abide, because everything should be pulled under that umbrella. So I got invited to St. Louis University School of Law to talk about my bill, and I was told it was for an international law symposium. I thought that I was going there just to talk for like 15 minutes, and mm-hmm. then I'd be done and leave. No, like Uh-oh. The whole day was about my bill, and I didn't know. And I was in there, and it wasn't me and students. It was me, a couple professors from St. Louis University Law School, and there were people there from Berkeley, and I mean, just all these big law universities all over the place. And one guy from California, he had his little teardrop tattoo. He's a professor, you know, law professor.
Interesting.
And he was, he got onto me for this. I don't know how it came up, but he said, well, what about you? And he accused me of having special license plates on my car because I'm a legislator. Well, little did he know, I'm the only state representative that I've ever met that refuses to have state rep license plates on my car, because a lot of representatives will use those as a license to speed.
Yep.
Because if the highway patrol pulls you over, they're like, oh, wait a minute, this guy votes on my budget. And so they're a little extra nice to you, and they give you more warnings than you deserve. And that always sat wrong with me.
Yeah.
That I would take advantage of my position and then be treated differently.
Well, and the sad thing is that that's a rarity.
It is a rarity.
But I mean, that's a testament to your integrity. I do understand. I mean, when you achieve a certain position, whether it's being elected to it or making your way up through the ranks at a company or whatever, there's certain privileges that come with each position that you hold. To an extent, I'm okay with that.
That's true.
It's when you exploit that, and when you do expect others to live by rules that you don't live by and you don't hold the same standards, that's when you really get into it. I mean, when you've got political leaders, Gavin Newsom's a perfect example. You know, during COVID, when everything was shut down and he got exposed for having his big dinner with his friends at the French Laundry restaurant out in California, it was so hypocritical because he was telling the citizens of his state they had to stay home, they had to be locked down, they couldn't go to restaurants, the restaurants were closing, but he could.
Yep.
Why is that? That's not right. And that makes people lose faith in their leaders.
That it builds these huge barriers of distrust because they're telling you, you got to stay indoors. When they're saying that while they're straightening their tie and go out to a fundraiser. And I want to take a step back and say, just because your state representative has these plates does not mean that he's trying to. You know, I don't want to come off like that guy that's just like resentful of people that do it. But there are some people that do it.
I'm sure there are.
Which is why I chose not to do it, because I wanted to take to extreme, I guess, the principle of being above reproach.
Yeah.
And it paid off when this law professor just immediately started throwing that in my face.
Were you able to do a little snap, snap, snap?
Oh, I wish I would have if I was that coordinated, but I'm not. But you should see the look on his face when I said, that is the wrong message and I'm the wrong target. I said, I do not have those things on my car. And he just didn't have anything to say. They were coming after me because of the bill that I introduced. Mm-hmm. It was a conservative bill that was meant to conserve the integrity of our constitutional system that's designed to protect our freedom. And they were trying to, several of these folks were trying to cut me down and try to push back against me until it came to the point where he wanted to impugn my own integrity.
Right.
And so it paid off.
Blew up in his face, didn't it?
So 8 years of getting speeding tickets as a state representative paid off for that one moment when this, you know, know-it-all law professor had to eat it. So I felt good about that.
Perfect.
I felt good about that. I've never been to law school, but I tell you what, that experience.
I have.
I know you have. And did you enjoy it?
Parts of it. Not necessarily. I mean, the school part of it, I didn't as much because it was very competitive. And, you know, I'd come from Mizzou where I didn't have to study too hard and I got good grades because, you know, I was lazy and kind of took advantage of that myself. And then I got to this school where it was really competitive and people were like really hardcore gunners. And I wasn't used to that. So that part was hard.
See, I think I probably would have liked it. But at the end of the day, I'm glad I chose the profession that I have.
Yeah.
I like finance. I like markets. I like the economy. So I have a lot of fun with that. But which, by the way, eventually we're going to talk a little bit about markets today. We might talk about markets after our next guest, maybe in the third segment today. So I'll go ahead and tease it right now. Well, how much time do we got right now, Stowe?
We've got about 30 seconds here.
About 30 seconds? Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to come back with Steve
Bucci.
Yeah, we're coming back with Steve Bucci here in just a couple minutes from the Heritage Foundation. So make sure you stick around for that right here on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show here at News Talk STL. This is Paul Kurtman with Susie Moore filling in for Tim and Chris today while they are out. And I am really looking forward to talking to our next guest, because if you've been paying attention to the news cycle, you know it seems like there's always something happening in China. And it seems like the more you pay attention to the news, no matter what the news media is doing, whether they're trying to cover it up, hush it, or whatever, we have leaders in government that in one way or another are connected to these other countries around the world and these other industries, and it just really feels like there's a lot of corruption going on. But right now, with what's happening in China, with all the protests and everything, and how our president is responding to that, but also what he's doing back here at home, just kind of seems to be like it's conflicting each other. So we're going to bring in our next guest. This is Steve Bucci. He's a visiting fellow for Special Ops and Disaster Management at the Heritage Foundation. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really, really looking forward to having this conversation with you today.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure to be on the air in St. Louis.
Great. It's always a pleasure for us to have you. I want to get right into this because right now people are really paying attention to what's happening in China with all these protests because of their COVID lockdown measures that they're taking and just really authoritarian coming in. President Biden, it kind of seems like he had been him-hawing around for the longest time before coming out and really saying anything. You had written an article earlier in November drawing attention to the fact that we have this relationship, this dynamic between America and China, and although we're kind of on opposite sides of the spectrum here, right, in terms of world powers and capabilities, America is incredibly dependent on China. Not just that, but the Biden administration seems to be pointing us or steering our economy towards electric vehicles, which are so dependent, the battery mechanisms and everything else, from the mining that's going on in China. And it almost seems like we're put backing ourselves into a corner where we might just wind up putting ourselves in a position that we're just not going to be able to get out of. What exactly is happening here? Can you help us make a little bit of sense of this?
Well, I don't know if I can make sense out of it. I can explain what's happening.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense to me either. But, you know, the huge push from the Biden administration is to go green, to go, you know, specifically electric vehicles, to move in that direction, to condemn fossil fuels and anything that is dependent on them. Well, okay, except that electric vehicles, number one, are not terribly ecologically friendly either. They don't, you know, create carbon dioxide in the air, but the mining of the minerals that go into specifically into the batteries and into a lot of the chips as well are horrendously bad for the environment. And it's really bad for the people that mine them, which in a lot of these, in China specifically, but in a lot of third world countries where China owns and manages the mineral rights, they use child labor. I mean, there's pictures of little, you know, 10-year-old kids up to their knees in this toxic sludge that is required in the process, which is quite a primitive process, actually, to mine these kind of special minerals that are used. And then China controls the vast majority of the production of the batteries. So the Biden administration's so-called ecological policies are pushing us not just to use electric vehicles, but to do so and become completely dependent on China. Now, you know, if we had a relationship with China like we do with, say, Great Britain, okay, that would, you know, that's a risk that you could take. We don't have that kind of relationship. China is one of the two most dangerous threats to our country, our biggest competitors economically, and basically our biggest competitor from a national security standpoint. And they are openly hostile to us. Why would any government think it was wise to make ourselves dependent on a country like that? But that's what the Biden administration is not just, you know, asking America to accept, but it's pretty much demanding that we go in that direction.
Steve, this is Susie Moore. Tying into that, how does this all tie in with Taiwan? Our dependence, our growing dependence on both these rare earth minerals and the chips, and then the relationship, the tense relationship between China and Taiwan.
Well, much the same way Russia is trying to use Europe's dependence on their energy, their fossil fuel energy, to get them to stop supporting Ukraine in its fight against Russia's aggression, the Chinese will certainly use our dependence, particularly America's, but really all the world's dependence on their monopoly on rare earth minerals and the other components of electric vehicle batteries to influence any response we would have in supporting Taiwan if China makes a move against them. These, you know, they love it for the economic benefit. They really love it for the geopolitical leverage that it gives them to constrain our foreign policy choices and to get us to line up with their interests rather than our own.
Steve, at the end of your article, you say something that's kind of alarming. You say that the Biden administration's extreme environmental policies, frankly, should be curbed. If we are stuck with them, we have to recognize their inherent contradictions and at least adjust them to reality. And then you go on to say China's ability to hamstring American industry and defense must be mitigated. And I hadn't even until I read that realized exactly how dependent we would become on them just for our own defense infrastructure, also our weapons and technology and everything else. But if China, two questions, I guess, has China done anything to hamstring us, either our industry or our defense, based on this particular relationship that we have with our own supply chain or these minerals, for example? And if they haven't, what would it look like if they did?
Well, they have. In some cases, one would say not intentionally, but, you know, we suffer having things on our shelves, our vehicle manufacturing, and this is just any kind of vehicle because of all the chips that are in there, because of China's supply chain issues that are caused right now by their COVID policies. Now, that's not necessarily them doing those actions deliberately to mess with our supply chain, but the results of their internal policies have grossly interrupted our supply chain. Anybody who's trying to buy a new vehicle knows that because it's taken months to get your vehicle put together. The truck is completely built. It's got no chips in it, so they can't deliver it to you. Yeah. How much more could they influence our supply chain if they were doing it deliberately to cause us problems? The more we go to the electronic vehicles, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have more electronic vehicles. If people want to buy those, that's fine. That's an option that American citizens should have. But this mandating of these vehicles long before we have worked out the second and third order effects of our inability to make the batteries ourselves and the throw in the ecological disasters in the mining at the beginning and the disposal of the batteries at the end, you know, this could turn out to be not just a policy disaster, but an ecological disaster. So, you know, the green people are really kind of famous for thinking one level in front of them. And that's all they demand. And they don't think about the other effects. They don't think about unemployment. They don't think about, you know, what it costs to execute their policies monetarily and with regard to the environment. They're not good policies. Maybe someday when the technology is better, we'll move in that direction. But demanding that it happen in the short term, which is what the Biden administration is doing by setting, you know, these standards that you have to have this by this year, you know, which is only a couple of years away, they are really sort of ramping up for a disaster and playing right into China's hands from a geopolitical standpoint. It's bad policy, and they're not even thinking about these second and third order effects.
Steve, you mentioned China's COVID policies, and there's been a lot of news lately about the sort of surprisingly large uprisings we've seen by the Chinese people protesting those policies and actually calling for Xi himself and the CCP to step down. How far do you see that going?
You know, in China, it's I'm not that optimistic yet. I'm, you know, heartened by the people standing up and saying, you know, enough's enough. But having a couple of million people protesting in China is not like, you know, having a couple of million people in Luxembourg protesting.
Sure.
It's a big ocean of people over there. And the Chinese government has absolutely no inhibition whatsoever at crushing those kind of demonstrations. And with them, when we say crush, it's not just an expression. You know, they're going to kill people. They've already done it. They imprison people. A lot of the people who died in that fire were Chinese Uyghurs. They're the Muslim minority there, who the Chinese, they just locked them in the buildings. That's what sparked these protests. And it's just, again, it's really bad COVID policy. It's horrendous repression of their own people. And we see similar things in Iran. You know, these totalitarian countries are not people that we can really deal with as equals. There's no moral equivalence either in absolute standing or in the way they think. So we can sit there and wag our finger at them, and the Chinese could care less because they still got us from an economic standpoint because of our dependence on them for so much stuff. So, President Biden's not going to get President Xi to change his policies towards any of that. So I'm not, sadly, very optimistic about it, though, I'm praying for the Chinese people that it'll really catch fire and maybe we'll see change in China. I pray the same thing for Iran, that their protests can bring about some change for their people as well.
Yeah. Steve, I want to thank you for coming on and just kind of offering some of that insight there and also making that connection between China and Iran. If people want to follow you, if they want to read some of the things that you're putting out either online or anywhere else, where's the best place that they can go to find that, and how can they find you on social media?
They can go to heritage.org, heritage.org. Not just me. I got a whole cadre of colleagues who are specific policy experts in this area. Everything on Heritage's websites is free for download. There's never any cost for it. At Twitter, I'm on at SBUCCI.
At SBUCCI. Steve, once again, thank you so much for joining us. We hope that you have a great rest of the week and that you'll join us again soon.
I hope we can do that. Thank you for having me.
Thanks,
Steve. All right. Thank you. I tell you what, the connection he's making between what's happening in China and what's happening in Iran is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you know that the Iranian soccer players refused to sing the national anthem at the first game?
Yeah, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, what's the lifespan of an Iranian soccer player when they refuse to sing their own national anthem in front of the world? Not just the world, but in front of the world playing the U.S.
Yep.
So I have a feeling we're not going to see much more of these soccer players.
Maybe not. But I also think that there's more chance for there to be change coming in Iran than we're going to see in China.
I would agree with that. And I think probably one of the differences there, too, is in China. I mean, the party, the state, the government. There's been so many revolutions in China. And over the last 60, 70 years, all these different, it seems like the Chinese love Chinese revolutions, but they always have to keep the revolution alive, And in Iran, have you ever seen these pictures of Iran, like in the 60s and 70s?
Yeah.
it looks like the U.S.
Right.
And so there's people that are still very familiar with what it's like to be free.
To say, they remember freedom.
Yeah, and have some choices on what you want to wear and where you want to go, if you want to travel or if you want to study and get a degree. So I think that the tyranny in Iran could be short-lived. So I would agree with you.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on that.
As opposed to the Chinese never living in a free society. All these thousands of years, they've never experienced freedom. So you got Lao Baixing now trying to deal with Xi's dictatorship that's there. I agree with you. It's much more likely that Iran may have a change.
That's a very astute historical observation. I mean, seriously. Mm. I mean, with everything that China's gone through for millennia, the violence and everything else, the suppression, all kinds of things.
They've never had a free society.
They've never had it. And we won't have it. I tell you what, if more of this COVID stuff keeps creeping up and people just, I don't know what it is, but like these people just, they keep pushing. There's this element of people in the government and in academia that just keep pushing.
The impulse towards authoritarianism, which is just mind-boggling to me.
It is. And when we come back after this next break, I'm going to play this clip of Fauci. This guy needs to shut up. I don't know if he realizes that he's really digging himself a hole. Because, I mean, and eventually, it's that hole's going to have to... I don't know if he's going to be able to dig his way out of it. I think that he is, right? Because nobody in government ever goes to jail. Right. I can't think of anybody in government that's ever gone to jail. But this guy is just out in the open. He's not even hiding. Like the other day, Chris was talking about hiding in plain sight. He's not even hiding. He's just out in plain sight. Did you hear what he said about when he was responding to a reporter's question about the lockdowns in China? Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm not sure if I heard that clip. I know I did a write-up on his appearance on Face the Nation over the weekend where he talked about the Chinese response to the COVID.
Okay, well, then you've probably seen this clip, but we'll talk about that. How much time do we have right now? Sounds like we're running a break.
Sure.
I just walked right into it. Okay, well,
was a good tease.
When we come back, I'm going to play that clip then, and then we'll discuss that a little bit more. And I'll go ahead and let you know, in the next hour, I'm excited to bring on a first-time guest, Adam Andrzejewski, who is the founder of OpenTheBooks.com. He's going to be talking to us a little bit about government spending. So this will be a really good conversation with him. This is Paul Kirtman and Susie Moore in for Tim Jones and Chris Arps, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com.
Not bad. Asserting that the country's strict COVID measures are scientific and effective. Are they?
Well, when you want to shut down... in order to interrupt immediately a process that's going on, like the spread of infection, there should be a purpose to it. Like you want to make sure you get enough ventilators or enough PPE, or you want to get your population vaccinated. The comment that I made about their severe actions that they've taken is that you have to have an end game. What's the purpose? If the purpose is let's get all the people vaccinated, particularly the elderly, then okay for a temporary period of time to do that, but they have very, very strict type of a lockdown. They're locking people in their homes, which is really, they can't even go out and, from what I hear, shop or walk a dog or something like that. That's going to create a lot of pushback on the part of the population if there's no underlying purpose of what you want to do.
Welcome back. This is Paul Kirtman and Susie Moore in for Tim Jones and Chris Arps here on News Talk STL. And that was Anthony Fauci. And it sounded to me like he was defending what China was doing as long as they have a follow-up mission, as long as they're doing it for a purpose. Mm-hmm. And that just blows my mind.
Well, you know, Paul... he represents science, and the science says...
No, he doesn't just represent it. He is science.
Now, Dr. Fauci has shown throughout the course of the pandemic that he does not seem to have any quibble with government exerting power over its population if it's for what he deems a just cause. You know, if it's lock them down, if it's to lock them down just to make sure they all get vaccinated, think about all of the what goes into that thought process.
Yeah.
That presumes that you have a government that has the right and authority to confine people and force them to be vaccinated in order to gain an ounce of freedom again. That's so backwards, but it's endemic in his thinking and the thinking we've seen from so many of the experts, and I've got that in air quotes, throughout the pandemic.
It's like he's saying that it's perfectly fine to act like an authoritarian and abuse the people, but just so long as you're actually going to be an authoritarian and continue to abuse the people. I mean, what you just said, that the thought process, everything that goes into this, another way to rephrase what he said is, well, it's perfectly fine to do this But just so long as you can also have something else you can force the people to do.
Authoritarianism is fine as long as it's my kind of authoritarianism, basically.
And as long as it keeps going, as long as it has an end game, and then that has an end game, and then that has an end game. And like, where was this talk a couple of years ago? Remember how bad it was in Australia?
Yeah.
People getting tackled outside just for stepping out their front door to smoke a cigarette, and they get tackled or they get tased, and then they get arrested. And here Fauci is, after all this time, well, it sounds like people can't even go grocery shopping.
That's shocking to him.
Is he not aware of all the businesses that he helped shut down to prevent people from going grocery shopping? Or if you owned a grocery store, you couldn't even open your doors to allow people to come in? I mean, is this guy, does he know? Is he having suffering from a case of amnesia? Does he not know who he is? He's responsible for all of these lockdowns that we've seen globally because a lot of people took their lead from Anthony Fauci. A lot of other countries did.
Well, I think it's the luxury of being a bubble dweller. He's been in the administration of our federal government for over 40 years. And he's not, that's a very insular world when you think about it. It causes you to kind of lose touch with and not think through what everyday people have to deal with and what the realities are that they deal with, the economic realities, just their daily lives, all those things. So I think he's just kind of maybe blind to it.
I love that phrase, bubble dweller.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that. Did you make that phrase up, or is that something that people say a lot and I just never heard it?
I don't think I can claim that I made it up, but I mean, it's the one that comes to mind to me to really describe particularly people that have lived within the halls of power of our government for years and years and years.
I'm going to start using it to describe a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a perfect description of so many people. Fauci's definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Democrat Party is by and large a party of bubble dwellers. They're all in their own little bubble. They got their wokeism and everything else, their progressive ideology. Antifa, BLM, still a bunch of bubble dwellers. But I'm not going to be completely one-sided here because there's a lot of Republicans that are bubble dwellers,
well,
too.
Sure. People that want to tune out anything that doesn't agree with what they're used to hearing and can't tolerate even contemplating it. That's
how I feel about the Republicans whenever they start talking about reining in spending to fight inflation. That's how the Republicans are by and large responsible for so much of the inflation that we're experiencing right now because
they opened up the wallets too.
And they were the first domino to fall when the pandemic hit. Now, I completely understand why somebody would make the argument that, well, it was a pandemic. We didn't know what was going on. But in those moments of chaos, when you don't know what's going on and you're not sure what to do, that's the time that you have to cling to your freedom the most.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time you have to be that is absolutely the time to get philosophical about what is the proper role of government and what should we be doing. In my line of work and investments, one of the things that I deal with a lot of times is people who don't know what to do. They usually decide to do nothing. And when you're talking about a portfolio at your retirement savings, that's usually can easily be the bad idea. You don't want to just do nothing because you don't know what to do. You want to find out what to do, right?
Sure.
But in a situation where the whole world is wondering what's going on with this pandemic, we have this virus, people are dying, they're getting sick, we're seeing symptoms, we're seeing people respond to a virus with symptoms that we've never seen before. So let's just immediately rush out and start locking people down. Let's create trillions of dollars worth of brand new money. Let's create stimulus. And it turns out doing something, so much of what was done has been the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
Bunch of bubble dwellers.
Panicked governance is not good governance.
No, it isn't. It's not good governance at all. And the problem, too, is I think we have a lot of bubble dwellers. I love that word. I like saying it. I think we got a lot of them in Washington, D.C., in both parties. And this is what they want to do whenever there's a pandemic. And here's the thing. I think a lot of these people, I don't think they have any type of genuine curiosity about what the real solutions look like because real solutions take hard work.
Yep.
And I think we have a few people. I think Rand Paul did a pretty good job. I would love to see Rand Paul have an opportunity. I would love to see him head up a committee to go after Fauci.
Yeah. I mean, I know we'll see some investigations and some hearings on it. I don't know how far that'll get.
That's all we'll see.
Yeah.
That's all we're going to see until this next election cycle. And they're going to use clips from these hearings on campaign ads and in everything else. It's just a big racket.
You sound very cynical, Paul.
I'm very cynical right now. I'll be more positive here in the next hour. Hey, okay. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of these issues, but we're also going to be talking to Adam Andrzejewski from OpenTheBooks.com right here in News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com.